Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health for her whole planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxic poisons like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Rachel Miller, who's the founder of the Rosalia Project for a Clean Ocean, a floating lab and classroom working on the problem of marine debris. Since 2010, on board American Promise, a 60-foot oceanographic sailing vessel, the Rosalia Project has been tackling marine debris from surface to seafloor while innovating solutions for the prevention and the cleanup of plastic trash in our waters. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on What Mama Wants today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to speak with you.
Yeah, it's really fun. I wondered if you could take us right to your research. You work with marine debris that you recover at sea. A lot of what you find out there is plastics or microplastics. And can you help us understand really why plastics are so toxic?
Of course. We do most of our work in the Gulf of Maine in the summer. And that's where a lot of our work happens. And the other area where sort of rest of it happens has lately been Vermont, where we live, and the Hudson River. And in all these places, we have been looking at marine debris in all of its forms. Now, the plastic part of it is particularly problematic, and it does have to do with toxics. So we have to think about it as posing multiple types of dangers. First to our sea creatures and to their habitats, and then to people. And so to just kind of break it down, we've got the physical dangers that's not related to toxics. That has to do with entanglement and ingestion, causing inflammation, things like that. Obviously, the photographs are very unpleasant. And then we've got the part that you really can't photograph as easily. Now, in the water, we have legacy chemicals that come under the title or the category of persistent organic pollutants. And these are things like PCBs, DDT, flame retardants, and these are known endocrine disruptors. So they mess with reproductive systems and they can stick to marine-borne plastic. They kind of stick there, but they don't go through. And so what has been shown is that these persistent organic pollutants can adsorb onto marine-borne plastic, and in particular, the microplastic category can then be ingested by creatures of all sizes. And scientific experiments have shown that then there can be desorption, so effectively unsticking, of these chemicals into the systems of creatures where there is the opportunity for those systems to be disrupted. As far as the link to humans, this is tougher because we still don't necessarily say that ocean trash has led to an illness. And that particular exact connection hasn't been made. But for me and our organization, we believe that this is a when, not an if. There is enough information for us to look at this situation with the transferring of persistent organic pollutants, to look at other issues are related to additives in the manufacturing of plastics, to consider other additives in our fashion industry. So, and that goes beyond just plastic. That happens on our naturally derived clothes as well. And when you put that all together, we believe that every moment spent protecting our public waterways, our freshwater and our saltwater waterways, from marine debris and this kind of physical man-made pollution is absolutely worth the effort.
I love that you're so convinced, and it probably buoys you in your work to really truly believe that this makes a difference and this cleanup matters.
Well, yeah, if you're going to wade around in trash, you've got to believe that it does make a difference. Because here's something, anyone, that's editorial you, doesn't know if it's your piece of discarded something or your bit of microfiber that injures or otherwise hurts a sea creature. So that level of uncertainty is worth preventing it.
Yeah, I love that actually. Not only are you not exactly responsible, but in fact, we're all culpable together. Who cares whose trash it is? It's still a hapless victim of a sea lion.
Yeah. Yeah. You just don't know whose it is. So might as well make the effort to keep it from happening.
Yeah. And so you're out there with some very high-tech equipment looking at what's on the bottom of the ocean, as well as capturing some of it and looking at it under microscopes. How extensive is the prevalence of plastic in the ocean that you're finding?
We find it everywhere. And it's important to consider this problem in some categories because it's so complex. And even just the word plastic is almost inadequate because there's versions that are extractive and versions that are less and all that. So, but I can tell you that while every sample that we take does not necessarily have plastic in it or anthropogenic, which means man-made items or microparticles, I can say that wherever we look, we find it from an overall standpoint. And so that's, you could think of this different ways. For example, we went to the Hudson River in 2019 and we sampled the air at two different heights, the soil and the water at the surface, the midwater column, and just above the river floor. And again, while there were a few locations where we didn't find any microplastic or anthropogenic microparticles, we found a lot of microplastic and anthropogenic microparticles in the air, the soil, and throughout the water column of the Hudson River. And stay tuned. We're working on that paper now. I'll send the link when that's ready.
So are you saying that the microplastics can become part of the weather cycle and be evaporated out of the water into the clouds?
Yeah, such a good question. This is the newest part of this science and understanding this pollution, this being the air. And there's definitely less scholarship about that, but it's picking up momentum and it's important. There are people who have documented microplastics effectively getting launched into the atmosphere through spray, so breaking waves against a rock. There are people who have indicated that it can evaporate off the water surface because the stuff is very, very small, especially in the nano range. We ourselves, a colleague, Kirsten Kapp and I, also one of Rosalia Project's guest scientists, we published a paper 2 years ago linking electric dryers to the environment. They are emitters of microplastic and microfibers directly into the environment.
Clothes dryers. Oh, so you're drying your fleece and little bits of it go out of the vent and into the air.
A lot of little bits. And I will send you the link to that paper that we did. That's an open access paper, so everyone can read that one. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So is it possible to prevent more pollution? And where is all this pollution entering the ocean?
Yeah. Okay. So again, super complex, but I do think there are places where we can make a difference. I'll just talk a little bit real quick about the microplastic part. Prevention is an interesting one. As far as the fragments go, the little bits, a lot of ways to help prevent that will be related to the consumer debris side and preventing things like overflowing trash cans in cities. Because you can really think about the mechanism of creating microplastics from overflowing trash cans. People like balance a bottle with its bottle cap on the top and it rolls off and it goes into the gutter where it gets run over by a truck. It gets pulverized, another car, truck, keeps getting run over. So it sat in the gutter in a zillion pieces. The next rain comes, washes it into the sewer system, especially in places like Boston and New York. And I actually don't know about Portland. So this would be interesting to know is you have these big summer deluge rains and you get into what's called the combined sewage overflow situation, where you effectively get the stuff from the street going to the nearest river or bay untreated. And that is a big input or emitter of or creator of microplastics.
Yeah, I watched your TED Talk, and you have footage there of every 3 seconds, things popping right out of an unfiltered storm drain into the harbor.
And that was all the stuff that we could see. We weren't even looking at microplastics that day. So yeah, you're right. You can totally see the video in the TED Talk. And then if we think about microfiber, a great way to prevent it, and you know, this is something we worked on in a very direct way, is to isolate some of these sources. One's the washing machine. We know that first, without purchasing anything, you can use strategies like wash in cold water, wash with your loads 3/4 to full. That's less garment-to-garment friction. So it's really great for saving everything. Saves money for water and electricity, and it also keeps your clothes from shedding as much. And then we have the Coroball. Of course, I have to talk about that because our team came up with it, but that is a way to help prevent microfiber from happening, and then also from microfiber from getting into public waterways. You know, down the line, there's opportunity for innovation here. Lots of opportunity for innovation in making our textiles more resilient. I think that's going to be one of the big things coming up, as well as making textiles out of materials that are much more bio-benign in the entire process of their life, and certainly less extractive and fossil fuel dependent, which is a different issue-ish. It's all related. It's incredible how related it is.
It is. I heard recently that 80% of our clothes are plastic.
Yeah, I've heard 60. 60 is a more frequent number, but it would be interesting where the 80 came from and if it was a regional thing, because certainly places that are very cold may have a higher synthetic
fleece factor.
Yeah, just a little bit of a higher synthetic ratio for thermals and quick dry and stuff like that versus cotton tops and although a pair of surf shorts. It's a rough one. That the reality is that the synthetic based clothing, there's a lot of it that we don't need, that you could just wear a nice organic cotton t-shirt if you can get your hands on one. But then there's some technical clothing that right now there isn't a replacement for. And I think that's the other area for innovation is how can we replace Gore-Tex and other problematic materials, problematic in terms of their chemicals, with something that offers the same weather resistance and temperature regulation with something that's more bio-benign, let's call it that.
Yeah. Yeah. Switching them out for something
exactly
less toxic. Yeah.
And I can give you some hope. I was really lucky to be one of the judges in an organization called Conservation X Labs. They had a microfiber challenge last year. And it was great reading the entries, the very, very sophisticated, high level, doing exactly what I'm talking about, investigating 100% natural coatings to put on naturally derived materials to help them act more like Gore-Tex. They are aiming to figure this out, as well as people using renewable and bio-derived front-end materials to make filaments in order to weave together to make textiles. So there is hope.
It's a cool time to be an innovator, engineer, a chemist.
I think there's a lot
of cool stuff going on.
I think there is.
So your project, the Roselia Project, exposes scientists, students, storytellers, and environmentalists of all kinds to study these problems firsthand. You have a hot new project that you're launching, and I wondered if you could tell us about CSI for the Ocean and how people could learn more about your initiative.
Thank you. Yes, we are very excited. We always try to take the scientific work we do and weave that into activities and resources to share with as wide an audience as possible. And one way we've done that before is we have a microfiber activity. I'll have a link for you for teachers and homeschool teachers. And it's really fun activity to kind of understand what happens in the washing machine. And the latest is, it's all related. We're taking the methods that we used on our Hudson expedition, the one with the air, the soil, and the water investigation, which are based in forensic science. We have an amazing partner, Dr. Claire Gwinnett. She's from Staffordshire University, an award-winning forensic fiber scientist, who in 2018 realized that she could bring what are ultimately more accessible and affordable methods that the forensic scientists were using, and bring that into ocean science, who was all pretty much using very expensive, higher academic only type of pieces of equipment, not necessarily something that like every police station might have. So that's what's really exciting. We're using this blend of methods from marine science and forensic science. And the program effectively is a global, well, will be a global citizen science microplastic mapping and monitoring project. That's a mouthful. So the short version is CSI for the ocean. And Claire and I both, along with a great team of fellow National Geographic explorers, will be on the EV Nautilus. And that is happening in about a month off the coast of Hawaii. We're going to be doing two things. One, investigating microplastics in the air and water around the Hawaiian Islands to see if there's a relationship there and see how that compares to other places. And two, we're going to be taking this next step in CSI for the ocean, which is in the test phase right now. So this is going to be test phase number two, to use the methods, share them with people, have other people use the methods. We even have kits available for motivated either classrooms, a citizen science. So this could just be a family or perhaps a homeschool group or family to be part of the front end of this project. And we'll have some links to the Nat Geo expedition. The opportunities span from being part of our early testers, in which case you'd get in touch with me directly, and my email will be shared at Resolia Project, to signing up a class for a ship to shore. So that's your kids in Maine live talking to one of our team members, me or someone else, who's on the Nautilus off the coast of Hawaii live. And we'll talk, we'll see each other. It's a video call. So that's
so
pretty cool.
Cool. It's so cool to be a young budding scientist and get to be kind of in on it.
That's what we're aiming for. We want people to be in on it. And we want people to be in on it in a meaningful way. So not just hold the clipboard style citizen science. I want people really doing science that answers questions that haven't been answered yet. And sometimes it is as simple as what washed up on this beach today, as long as we're keeping a comprehensive enough data collection. And that's something that Resolia Project's done from the very start, is we do have a 2-page data card. And it can feel sometimes a little onerous, but it's really paying off for us 10 years later, because we have opportunities to take multi-year data sets and share them with people who have realized that something that we've been collecting info on is preventable, and that there are methods to prevent it that maybe didn't exist before. And having these data sets is really important. So everyone can be part of this work in all different ways. And I hope that your listeners will check it out.
I hope so, too. You know, it's all of our trash and it's all of our solution together. I love how generously you share your information. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Rachel Miller. Rachel points out that picking up one plastic bottle is much easier than picking up 55,000 bits of microplastic from the same bottle as it breaks down. We know that a lot of our clothes are made up of plastics as well, and they're breaking down in the laundry and ending up in the waterways. That's why it is so cool that this CEO is also a co-inventor of the Cora balls, like coral, but without the L. An innovation used in your washing machines to collect the wee plastic bits to keep them out of the public water systems and out of our bodies. What is it like being an inventor? And and tell us about this little invention.
It is equal parts satisfying and challenging, I would say. It is neither just one nor the other. And, you know, it was something that we set out to do. So the satisfying part is twofold. We wanted to see if we could come up with a solution to help prevent the microfiber pollution problem. And so to have something that does help prevent the microfiber pollution problem is very, very satisfying. And to have people use it and be confident that it's working, which it works in two ways. It prevents your clothes from shedding in the first place, which is something you can't see happening, but has been scientifically proven. And in most households, there'll also be fuzz collected in the Cora ball. So really something that you can see and throw away. So, and either way, you're keeping the stuff from being what we call bioavailable in our public waterways. So as far as the invention part, I will share one of the ways that we got over one of the most challenging moments is that we made a bunch of versions that didn't work, because that's what happens. And well, no one had done it before at all, really. An in-drum device that was meant to catch microfiber pollution, because that problem had really just been discovered. So the ideas we had in the beginning really just weren't satisfactory. They didn't work. They broke. And so we sat down and we thought, okay, let's simplify this problem. What are we trying to accomplish? And this whole process taught me such a big lesson, because when we broke it down, we couldn't say catch microfiber pollution. It is not breaking it down into its most simple thing. So we needed to find the right set of words. And the right set of words to describe what we needed was we needed to catch small things from moving water. We knew we couldn't just use a piece of mesh or some kind of sieve over the effluent, because in order to get the microfibers that we need, they're very, very small. Everybody's washing machines would back up and flood pretty much every time they use them. And so that's unacceptable. So we need to catch small things from moving water. And once we got that sentence, we realized coral does that. Coral totally catches small things from moving water. And that was when we moved forward with what became the Cora ball. And I've used that in other problem solving challenges. This kind of concept of forget the words that you're using at the very, very end, but really simplify it to its most basic. What are you trying to do in the plainest language? And I found that very helpful.
I love it. It's kind of poetry. It's the humanities of science. It's thinking about your invention in terms of something that already exists in the ocean that you want to emulate. And so these Cora balls are about 3-inch balls. They're plastic. They look loopy, like flowers, but inside's a net that collects this microfiber so that it doesn't go out with your water that's being flushed from the washing machine. It's brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And to know that it also prevents shedding from happening in the first place was a satisfying discovery. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure your own mother's very proud of you. I wonder what you think Mother Earth wants with regard to clean oceans and waterways.
Well, I love the title of this podcast. I love the concept and this question as well. And I have to think that Mama Earth, well, Mama Earth is 70% water. So she's got to be thinking about how to keep that water clean, and especially to keep it clean from something that's so hard to fix after it's done. Think of how easy it is to keep one whole bottle out of the ocean, whether that's to not use it in the first place or at least make sure it gets recycled, versus allowing it to become 49 to 55,000 pieces of barely seeable microplastic. So I think Mama Earth would like us all, from all the deciders, from household and individual deciders to the corporate and government level deciders, to make protecting the ocean a priority and to recognize that by addressing the problem of marine debris, the three categories in particular of derelict fishing gear, consumer debris, and microplastic, including microfiber pollution, other problems will also see more than just incremental improvement. In particular, climate change and human health. Certainly biodiversity will. And so that is what I think Mama Earth wants as it relates to our ocean.
I think she'd probably like a little ride on the Rosalia on American Promise. I think she would. Pretty excited about what you're doing out there.
And, you know, I have to say one last thing is every now and then I think Mama Earth nudges some of the sea creatures to come up and thank us.
Really?
Because we have a pretty good, I don't want to jinx this, I'm knocking on wood, record of sea creatures coming to us, in particular in the Gulf of Maine. And maybe everybody does in the Gulf of Maine because it's such a great place, but the mola mola, the humpback, whales, the pods of dolphin, the seals, the finbacks, we've seen turtles and puffins, and every now and then we feel like the timing, it feels like a thank you.
Oh, that's really sweet. I hope that they do get it. To close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your relationship to the water and the earth and these animals, if I might.
I'm ready.
All right. As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside?
Oh, it was go swimming. I'm a water person, but yeah, 100% it was swimming, sailing, and skiing. I consider skiing a water sport. It's just frozen water.
Yeah. What was your water body?
Saratoga Lake. I'm a freshwater for most of the year, and also the New Jersey shore near Margate and Ocean City, where my grandparents lived.
Describe a scene in nature where you have felt awe.
I studied marine mammal biology and conservation with the School for Field Studies in Baja, Mexico. And one of our units was doing hydrophone work, recording humpback whale song off of Cabo San Lucas. And we took a little swim break because it was a billion degrees. And I was alone. I was away from the rest of the group. And I had just goggles, no fins or anything. And a juvenile male humpback whale came and circled under me. And while he did, he rolled over and we made eye contact. Like he rolled in order to direct his eye to the, I usually feel graceful in the water, but I didn't then because I was so shown up by this enormous creature. And it was pretty magical. I even just talking about it now, I get the chills.
Yeah. How profoundly beautiful.
It was something. Yeah. I can remember the creases around his eye. It was stamped in my memory. Spectacular. Very lucky.
What's one thing that your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
My mama is a master gardener, and her gardens are absolutely stunning. They're stunning, and they're more wild than not. Everything isn't perfect. Oh, I just loved them. I've always loved them, and I loved her love for them. And I think that is what strikes me the most with that question.
What's one thing that you wonder about in nature?
Oh, so many things. I wonder about so many things. I often wonder what animals are thinking. I wish I knew like exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah, maybe that baby humpback's telling somebody the story right now about when he swam under this human.
Yeah, and they were they were very calm on the outside, but could tell they were freaking out on the inside.
Exactly.
I can feel the vibration.
What's your favorite baby animal?
Oh my God. I have to say baby elephants. I love them. I can't get enough of them on Instagram.
I know. They can fix a bad day.
Always.
Yeah. Rachel, you are the captain of the world's greenest sailing vessel, out there working to innovate solutions and communicate your scientific findings to the daunting global problem of plastics in our water. Thank you for the loving way you approach our oceans and holding on to real optimism. And thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for that incredibly generous description. But over the last 10 years, we've had some truly extraordinary people, and certainly sailing the boat, running Rosalia, inventing the coral ball. None of it happens alone. And I want to thank the extraordinary team that's been part of it this whole time.
And people can find out lots more about your boat and your team at rosaliaproject.org.
And even be part of the team. We are always looking for new team members.
Excellent. Thank you so much.